Good morning.
And call our meeting to order the Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners on April the 7th, 2021 at 8:30 a.m. Our first item was the call to order, and since we have not a big list this morning, we'll just go by what Heather just went through, and we have everyone noted as being present. So I will quickly read our basic statement and reminder to all participants. Please be advised that this is a professional administrative meeting. All board members will conduct themselves in a professional manner, and it is expected that all other participants will conduct themselves in a professional manner. Combativeness, rudeness, verbal aggression will not be tolerated, and if such behavior occurs, the board chair reserves the right to limit those who may address the board, and the board does strive to conduct its meetings with the utmost respect for the process and for those who are in attendance. Does anyone have a declaration of any conflict of interest on any action listed on the agenda today? All right, seeing none, we will move on to, we'll go ahead and do, go ahead with our minutes from March 10, 2021. Does anyone have any questions or concerns regarding the contents of the minute meeting, the minutes from the meeting of March 10? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the general session board meeting minutes of March 10, 2021. Seeing there are no questions. Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Do we have any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? So moved. All right. We'll move on here to item five for board review discussion. And that we have investigation file under subheading A. The complaint number is 20-27-C, Dr. Mark Olson. And we, Dr. Olson is not present, but we have Dr. Polakoff, the investigator, and our complainant initials, BW, is that correct? BDM, I apologize. Just a reminder that that's how we refer to the complainant, by initials. And so, Dr. Polakoff, we are ready, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Your report, please.
Good morning, board. This is Dr. Polakoff on case 2027C. Mark Olson, the complainant, is initials B and M. The patient wrote his complaint that he underwent surgery which gapped open a wound and his bone was exposed, turning black. Dr. Mark Olson neglected doing a revision surgery for nearly 2 months, and the patient stated that he begged the doctor to do the surgery. Even when his leg was getting worse and getting black and the bone was exposed, he stated that the doctor delayed in his care. He continued to talk to Dr. Olson every single visit, when is it ready to do the surgery to his leg? He continued to say, let's wait and see, while waiting for the doctor to arrange the surgery to close the leg. The surgical site turned black and dead and ate into my leg, exposing the bone. Dr. Mark Olson finally agreed to do a revision surgery. The patient's insurance expired. Dr. Olson would not return his phone calls, according to the patient, or messages. His future appointments, planned surgery, and all office contacts were canceled without telling the patient. The patient stated that he was in pain with his leg getting worse. He sent texts, emails, phone calls, etc., all to no response. And he was abandoned with his blackening leg, according to the patient. Dr. Olson only contacted the patient once when he was angry, when the patient had a negative Yelp response about how the doctor treated him. It was his opinion, and he said that he needed to take it down. Now, due to the doctor's negligence and malpractice, he can no longer work nor function as before, and he states that Dr. Olson practiced below the standard of care. There were several allegations filed in this complaint. The allegation number one is abandonment of patient. In this scenario, I have substantiated this. The doctor does not chart, nor did I find any notes, letters, documentation of transfer of care of this patient. The doctor did not notify the patient that he was canceled as his patient, and the doctor did not have the standard of care practices for notification of the to the patient that his care should be transferred to another physician. Allegation number two, practicing surgery without concerns of post-operative care risk. Substantiated. The leg wound was getting worse, turning black. Concerns in review of the medical records, timing of the wound care, and delaying a surgical recovery procedure were not documented for the benefit of the patient. The lack of use of consultants, wound care, plastic surgery, hyperbaric oxygen, etc., are options for problem wounds. Concerns in the medical records of the patient on prednisone 20 milligrams per day and the addition of 1 cc Kenalog 40 milligrams at the time of surgery are of concerns for this investigator. No mention of why the patient was on the prednisone or the cephalosporin antibiotic listed in day one of the patient medical record. Only after the leg turned black on the side of the incision did the doctor ask the patient if he was still on prednisone. Why was the what was the necessity of the 40 milligrams of Kenalog for this surgery? It was not in a high-fat area, not an area where a strong steroid should be infiltrated if it could be helped due to the heavy tendinous area, minimal fat pad, scar tissue from prior surgery, etc. The sutures were removed exactly 13 days post-op. The incision gapped open. The patient is very athletic. He already had scar tissue in this area from his first surgery, which was a soccer injury repair. So it is a bony area, large tendons, little fat, scar tissue present, and you could palpate the screw heads. The logical surgical approach for this area of the body was to leave the sutures in more than the exact 13 days of surgery to heal. As soon as the sutures were removed, the surgical site gapped open immediately. Did the doctor ever consider at this moment in time to throw in some additional sutures back into the area to allow it to heal? As soon as it gapped open, you knew that this was going to be a problem in this bony area. In the office, Dr. Olson did an extensive debridement. The witnesses report that there was no special draping, no cleansing solutions wiped onto the wound to clean it, no special instrumentation. He took the tools out of the drawer. What sterile technique was used to reduce the infection rate of the wound? If Dr. Olson did such an extensive debridement, as was stated in his notes, then why did he not suture the area when he saw the problem to begin with? It is predictable that the patient was going to have problems that he has had, with no surprise. In an area of prior surgery, scar tissue, minimal subcuticular fat, etc., and a patient on past history of steroid use, 13 days is far too early to pull the sutures out. Allegation number three, lacking substance in medical records which directly impact the patient's present and future health. Substantiated. Poor description, documentation of wound, leg, etc. Poor dictation of operative report. The doctor stated the operative report that a linear incision was made parallel with the fibula. Approximately how long was the incision? The hardware was identified and freed. What hardware? Were only the screws removed? Was the plate removed? There's no documentation. Fosha was obtained utilizing 3-0 Vicryl and 4-0 Monocryl for the skin. What about the subcuticular tissue? Was that layer not closed? Do you have the intraop fluoroscopy pictures? What kind of bandage was applied in the operating room? No mention of this. It might be understood by Dr. Olson, but what exactly does hardware removal mean? Is it just the protruding screws partial screw removal, only screw removal, removal of the plate? There's so many questions. A post-op x-ray would have been the norm to evaluate how the bone had developed since his trauma surgery. No x-rays were taken post-op through to the last office visit 2 months later. The notes indicate that the patient was on Bactrim DS. When was this prescribed? It all of a sudden appeared in the record. If Dr. Olson did not write or call this in, who did? Notes need to be more complete. Medical records need to be a template for another physician to be able to review and pick up the patient's care when needed. Dr. Olson's and his colleagues' records were a lot of carryover from the initial visit and little substance of each visit that was unique to that visit. X-rays should have been taken after the surgery. This was to evaluate the continuing degradation of wound and evaluate the stability of the ankle after whatever hardware was removed, which I have no idea after reading the op report. Allegation number 4, failure to transfer medical records, substantiated. The patient phoned several times to try and get the medical records transferred to the hospital. He was in the hospital at the time of the request, having to have emergency treatment on his leg. His present surgeon and the consultants asked BM, the patient, to contact Dr. Olson's office and try and get the records as soon as possible, but to no avail and no assistance from the doctor's office. BM called, texted, emailed multiple times to try to desperately get the records, but was turned down. Allegation number 5, billing concerns, substantiated. The doctor billed for a chronic wound care. The wound was only 3 weeks post-op. Bills were submitted for 3, 4, 5, and 6 weeks post-op, which should have been included in a global post-op fee. Bills were submitted for a level 4 visit, which should have been a level 3. His records do not support a level 4 complexity. There is a lot of carryover and duplication of records. In summary of the patient's medical records, the patient at the time was a 37-year-old male who had an ankle injury due to soccer in 2015. He fell, slipped, and the ankle was hurting, had to have surgery. He wore a brace. The patient was on a past medical history of benzonatate, cefadrin, and prednisone 20 milligrams QD. But there was no indication in the chart why was the patient on the prednisone and the antibiotic. The Sonoran Quest lab report was within normal limits the next visit. On 12-19-19, pre-op surgery planned. Prednisone daily, 20 milligrams, again repeated in the chart, but no indication as to why the patient was on the prednisone. Further down in the medical records, the doctor on 12-23-19 ran an Arizona Pharmacy Board request for prescription history. The patient had 0 fills. Surgery hardware was removed on 12-27-19. But again, as I reported earlier, there was no indication of what hardware was removed. Was it partial? Was it only the screws? Was it the plates? Was it total? I have no idea. Closure was obtained with freovicril and fluoro monocryl for the skin. Again, in this very tenuous area, what about the subcuticular tissue? Only 13 days post-op, the sutures were removed. A betadine was applied in a dry sterile dressing. The wound gapped open. A culture was taken the following 2 weeks. Damp growth, Pseudomonas. Bactrim DS is listed in the meds, no mention of when this RX was given. Medical records are incomplete, as stated before. The patient then just transferred his care to Dr. Harrell. Dr. Harrell did an emergency surgical repair to try to salvage his leg, and the patient has had to have several debridements and physical therapy and further care to maintain his ability and agility in walking for this limb. The doctor, I find, has substantiated all four allegations. And are there any questions from the board?
Yes, yes, Dr. Polakoff, this is Dr. Campbell. Thank you for such a complete, well-done report. Find, again, a lot of everything you have discussed. Let me get my questions here for you. One of the things I notice also on the documentation is even after the hardware is removed, the description and the physical exam shows that we still have palpable screws after surgery, and this happened for several visits postoperatively. Also, I find interesting that there's the same note that transfers from visit to visit. They're doing muscle testing. Why would you do muscle testing on an extremity that's had surgery? So, as you know, the list could go on and on and on. So, my question is, Dr. Polakoff, what is the time frame? What is the number of days for the global post-operative period for the 20680 for the removal of painful hardware?
That is 90 days.
A 90-day, okay. Did you see any documentation and information in the medical record from the hospital showing that they requested records and that those were denied?
I did not. Okay. The patient, according to the patient and Dr. Harrell, tried to get the records himself to expedite so that he could have surgery within days of his admission. Mm-hmm. And this was turned down by the office.
Because that was one of the things I noticed in one of the notes from the office, that they denied that that they had received anything from the hospital requesting records. So, you know, we have the little he said, she said here. So that moves on to the next one. Did you see anything in the medical record showing that the patient or the complainant canceled appointments? I believe, the dates of 219 and 429?
No, and that was of contention with the doctor and the patient. He said, she said. But on the patient's side of this, the patient, every time he went to the visit, he had his girlfriend with him.
Yes.
So I independently contacted the girlfriend, and she did substantiate everything that he told me. They are no longer together, but she said that she was also frustrated with the care given to BM in this case, and that everything that BM reported, she verified.
Okay, on the issue of the electronic prescriptions, I did find, and to my board members, that's on page 45 of our packet, there on 130 of 20, there was electronic transmission for Percocet and Sylvadine. That was the only one I found. I didn't find any for any of the other antibiotics or anything. And did you see any evidence of a DME receipt for and dispensing form for the cam walker for the surgery?
No, I did not.
Okay, I did not either. Thank you for confirming that. Did you see any phone call records in the chart from Dr. Olson that indicated that the hospital called about getting records, or any emails, any faxes on that?
No, the only contact after the patient was discharged from the practice and stopped communication with the practice is when he had a negative Yelp and the doctor called him and demanded that he take it down.
Thank you. And Dr. Polakoff, it is well known that one of the more common complications from a lateral ankle surgery is a dehiscence. And particularly now here you have a second surgery in the same site, albeit years down the road. Plus, again, with the chronic use of prednisone. So I'm just, your comments on that.
I find that the doctor should have addressed why are you on the antibiotic and the prednisone during the very first visit and documented that.
Definitely.
I
didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. And that goes back again to the this very, very poor documentation that, you know, nobody could really have probably picked up that chart and known what was really going on. And then on the issue of, you know, calling a wound chronic, you know, most wounds, as we know, heal within 4 weeks. And, you know, a chronic wound is something considered that hasn't been healed in an 8-week period. And obviously there was nothing really done to evaluate that from the fact that, you know, what were the other causes as to why this wasn't healing in addition to the prednisone? I mean, it could have been vascular, could have been diet, you know, as we all know, a variety of things. So, and you didn't see any of that indicated in the chart notes, correct?
That is correct.
I think that's all of my questions. I have a whole bunch for the doctor, but he is not present. See if there's anything of my questions for him that I could actually direct towards your investigation report. If you just give me just a moment here. And there was no, I did not see anything. And did you see anything in the chart regarding any form of post-operative trauma to that leg? I know that there was a statement that the patient had gotten the dressing wet, but I didn't see. Did you see any other post-operative or any questions regarding post-operative trauma?
No, I did not.
And Dr. Pocock, what day was the patient seen in the emergency room, and was that at Banner Hospital?
That was, just one moment, please. I don't have that in my record right now.
Okay, well, we can ask the complainant for that information.
Okay.
He will know that. Dr. Foreman, sir, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I'm looking through the notes, and it's on page 60. There are some messages back from his staff on 226, 33, and 39 regarding where to send the notes. Because sending it to someone's personal email is not HIPAA compliant.
Okay, I'm sorry, and okay. I don't understand the question.
No, I'm just saying, there's a point of information, more that, I mean, the office did try calling the patient back. I don't know if you saw that on those
days. Yes, I did.
Okay, and were there any visual documentation? I didn't see any in there for the surgery to remove the screws.
No, there wasn't. That's why I was confused as to exactly what was removed.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
You're welcome.
Dr. Ulano?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. As I understand it, there were several correspondences with BM and Dr. Olson. When this was done, was the correspondence done through text? Was it to Dr. Olson's phone or the office when he sent the text?
I don't know.
Okay. If it was text and email, we should have all the records that the BM sent Dr. Olson. Did we get any of that?
I'm sorry. Could you please rephrase the question?
Sure. I saw on the record the information that the VM sent was via text and email, the correspondence. Do we have any of that from VM, the text and the email that he sent?
I do not.
Okay. I'd like to get those records if we can. When the ulcer was worsening, one of the things that they wanted to do was a revision. And on 212, it was advised that surgeries were performed because of if it was painful and had a deformity. Was any pre-surgical workup performed on that visit, such as illustrations of blood workup or anything that they were planning?
He did have lab work, but that was it.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Ilano. Mr. Rhodes, do you have any questions, sir?
The only thing I was curious about, if BM had any proof of his attempts to contact Dr. Olson.
Good, yes. That, Mr. Rhodes, those are things that keep that thought, because we will need that as this proceeds. Appreciate that. Let me make myself a note. And again, what was your question again, Mr. Rhodes?
If BM, the patient, had proof of his attempts to contact Dr. Olson.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, Mr. Rhodes. All right. Does anyone, before we hear from our complainant, does anyone have any other questions for Dr. Polakoff at this time? All right. Thank you again, Dr. Polakoff. All right, sir, this is Dr. Campbell. So I will ask you if you can give us a summary of your care experience there with Dr. Olson, and then we will have an opportunity to ask you some questions. So if you can kind of, you know, summarize, you know, 5 minutes or so, that would be great. Because we read the documentation that you have sent us, so in our board packet. So please absolutely. Proceed. Thank you.
Absolutely. I want to thank the board for allowing me to speak and be heard. I appreciate it, your time. I'll keep this as brief as possible. It's difficult to relive this, so I apologize if I need to pause. Dr. Olson removed my ankle hardware on the 27th of December, 2019. It was 7 screws and a plate. After a brief visit previously where he confirmed that it could be easily removed, straightforward, simple recovery, procedure and recovery. This began a steady decline fueled by neglect on Dr. Olson's part. The suture started giving out pretty fairly quickly around the 29th, and the incision was already trying to open and fighting the sutures, bleeding, leaking, leaving it open to the world, germs, bacteria, water and shower, etc. I called Dr. Olson's office. They hadn't come in. It was simply bandaged and told me, it's fine. Let's wait and see what it does. And this is a phrase that was repeated by Dr. Olson at every appointment over the next 40-plus days. Let's see what it does. Let's see what it does. Let's see what it does. He allowed it to fester, decline, not heal in the least, and ultimately became riddled with infection, which exposed my bone, put me in danger of losing my foot. Weeks go by, and I have appointments with him weekly, and the wound's getting worse. He at one point prescribes some antibiotics. He prescribes some expensive ointments, all to which is hard for me to afford because I cannot work the way I was. But I went with it, trying to go with his plan. Several times I mentioned that this was not looking good and I'd like to do something more, but he just kept saying, let's see what it does. It wasn't until like mid-February where he finally admitted that, yeah, he needed to do a revision surgery to correct the dehisc wound. So almost 2 months later, he finally agrees, okay, let's book a surgery. So we book a surgery. The day before the surgery, Dr. Olson's scheduler learns that my insurance drops me. And I had no idea. Dr. Olson canceled the surgery, and this is what began the real grim time. He told me the surgery was canceled and that by no means would he operate without insurance. So, mind you, I had a witness. She, my ex-girlfriend, attended every appointment, never missed one. We listened to every phone call on speaker. She can attest to all of this. So I'm desperately trying to get reinstated on my health insurance, denied at every turn, and I'm running out of time because this, my leg is dying. The inside was just disgusting. The wound turned black. It would open up, constantly bleed, leak. It was turning all dry and hard at times. It was scary. Like the inside of my leg was dying. My bone was exposed. I missed days of work, suffered in pain. At this point, Dr. Olson would not return my calls. He has spun a different story, but he would not return my calls. As far as proof, I can look at my records backdating to phone calls that I left over and over again. I was left in pain with a rotten hole in my leg, my bone exposed, and he wouldn't respond to anything. No messages with his staff, nothing. In a final act of desperation, I went to see the doctor that ultimately stepped in and righted all of the wrongs. He gave me a surgery, emergency surgery. I was in the hospital for 6 days where I missed all sorts of work, racked up thousands of medical bills, destroyed my credit. I had an MRI. I had a CAT scan. They were concerned the infection had spread, so they were looking for it everywhere, you know. The hospital, I was in requested records from Dr. Olson several times, and they were ignored. I called his office personally at request of the hospital and my doctor, saying we need to look at this to see what's up. And he wouldn't respond to calls. He wouldn't respond to messages. I left messages at both offices, his Mesa and his Phoenix office, desperately attempting to get these records because I'm being held in the hospital. They needed information. He would not give it up. Because that's what Dr. Olson does. He ignores and he neglects. Dr. Harrell saw it to my healing over the next 8 months. Dr. Olson's negligence put me in the darkest place I've ever been, severely depressed, suicidal. I've never been abandoned by a doctor before. And when I spoke with him through email after I left the Yelp review, which was very honest and straightforward, he'll tell you a different story. He'll tell you that he offered to do the surgery for free, and this could not be further from the truth. Again, I have witness. He, in an email, said, I offered to do it for free, and that's just not true. I don't know where he's getting this information. I think he knew that he messed up, and he's just backpedaling. After my hospital, this is where it gets interesting. These visits, the doctor appointments. After my hospital stay, I was on the path to healing with the help of another doctor. Dr. Olson made false appointments without my knowledge, without my consent, for me. I know this because I got the robot calls the day before trying to confirm. These appointments were fabricated in what I believe was an attempt to cover his negligence. I think he knew he abandoned me. He knew he refused to cooperate and provide medical records. He knew that he refused to do a surgery without insurance. And his last act of malpractice was making false appointments without my consent or knowledge in what I suspect was an attempt to make it look like I didn't show up for appointments. I don't know why he did that. It was super weird. The way he acted through this whole thing was just terrifying, so I don't know why I'm surprised. As a result, I have pain every day. I have lost mobility. I'm a photographer and a videographer for a living. I'm a media creator. This profession requires standing all day, movements, pivoting, up and down, all of which I cannot do without pain. Lifting heavy objects, name it. It's an industry where you're on your feet. And I've lost mobility. I have pain every day. This thing is cracked open and bled on occasion. I can't work how I need to in the condition that Dr. Olson left me in. He's backpedaled and lied. He's fabricated a version of this situation that is not true, did not happen. Every doctor that saw this was appalled that Dr. Olson would leave a patient like this in his care. He's altered my life for the rest of my life with his negligence. And yeah, I think that's about it. Thank you for letting me speak. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I have some questions for you, sir. Why have you been on the prednisone? And how long have you been on that?
So I was taking it previous to my initial appointment with Dr. Olson. I had a sinus infection that was prescribed to me with some antibiotics previous. Mm-hmm. So it didn't come into question until much, much later in my care of Dr. Olson, but I had done a cycle of it previously and had been off of it when I went to see him initially.
Okay, so are you still, so when you went, during the surgical time, were you still on it?
I was not.
You were not on it with the surgery, but you had been on it. How many days did you take it for that sinus infection?
I believe it was through the cycle of the antibiotics, which would be 10 days.
10 days. And 40 milligrams was your dose?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Did Dr. Olson ever discuss with you the effects that steroid like prednisone can have on your ability to heal?
No, he did not.
Okay. I have a long list here, so hang on. Do you remember at the hospital a name of a person that you spoke with in regarding your medical records request?
No, because I couldn't get through to them.
No, I'm talking about someone at the hospital, sir. When you were in the hospital, do you remember a name or somebody in the records department or in administration that you talked to?
Oh, I apologize. So somebody at the hospital I talked to about getting records, not somebody at Dr. Olson's office, I see. Man, it was such a dark, terrible time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall names. I could probably dig through, because I have a stack of medical bills from this. I'm sure I could find out. It was an infectious disease doctor.
Okay.
And I cannot recall her name, but with some time, I could find out. But she really wanted to see these records, like, badly. And I tried and tried and tried. Even the hospital tried and tried and tried to get these records. And as the board has seen, he didn't keep good records. So I don't think he was in the mood to cooperate in the least or give us records, which is why he ignored the requests. So I can't, unfortunately, remember her name.
Okay.
She's an infectious disease doctor at the hospital.
Well, we can get things. When you were, prior to your surgery, we know you had some lab work done, but in the office, did the doctor listen to your heart or your lungs or palpate your abdomen or anything like that, take your temperature or your blood pressure?
The doctor himself did not do any of that. I remember I got my vitals taken once there, but nothing else, chest cavity, abdomen, nothing else like that.
Okay.
No.
Okay. And were you given detailed instructions for your post-operative care?
I wouldn't say it was detailed. I was just told to elevate it and lay real still in bed. It seems straightforward. Ice and elevate when necessary. Limit activity. Do not aggressively, try and force range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it. And, straightforward, commonsensical things. And I did. I laid in bed with it elevated.
Yeah.
So in-depth detail, I wouldn't say so. It was just kind of straightforward. Lay in bed and elevate it.
Okay.
Hold still.
So then, but when you had the wound, did they instruct you on dressing the incision site once it dehisced or opened up?
He just prescribed ointments and said to put it, to apply it and clean it, you know, occasionally.
Oh, okay.
Which I did. I mean, okay. I made this my second job.
Yeah, sure you did. Okay. Did you ever receive a letter from his office discharging you as a patient?
I did not.
Okay. And you've answered this saying that did he tell you he would do the reparative surgery at no charge?
He never said that. In fact, he was adamant that he would not do it free of charge. And then he billed me for every little thing he possibly could.
And did you get your dressing wet before the first post-operative visit? They need a note in the chart that you've gotten your dressing wet.
So it's already started to open. So I was bagging it in the shower. You
yes.
know what I mean?
Okay. Uh-huh.
And some water did get in there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I called him and said, "Hey, this thing has been opening up and it's leaking a lot. I need it to be looked at."
Okay, that's what I okay. Just wanting to confirm that sequence of events there.
Mm-hmm.
After your surgery, sir, did you experience any trauma? Like, did you fall? Did you hit your leg?
Not at all. Zero trauma. Like I said, I mean, through this whole thing, I was bedridden, essentially. So I laid in bed. There's no trauma at all whatsoever.
So with the pictures you sent us, and thank you for sending those back with dates on that. That was helpful. Did you mm-hmm. show any of those pictures to Dr. Olson?
Yeah, I did show them to him, and he had a first person view of it weekly too, and he
mm-hmm.
looked at it every appointment. So, and yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how my leg looks. There's no.
Wow.
No further trauma besides the neglect of Dr. Olson and, you know, the surgery.
Okay. And what day did you go to the emergency room, sir?
Okay, so that was blurry. Again, I was in danger of losing my foot. It was a very traumatic time. I believe I could find out with looking through records. I'm looking at a calendar. I want to say it was late February of 2020. I want to say it was like the 27th, around there.
Okay. Well, that information can be get records,
okay.
Other records. I just wanted to ask you that. Have you now? There was when he performed the debridement in the office without any sterile technique, etc., and he didn't use any anesthesia. And his chart notes that he didn't do that because you had profound sensory loss. So, have you ever had any? I mean, is your foot and your leg numb or tingle or burn? Did it ever?
Throughout the 2 months
mm-hmm.
of in his care,
mm-hmm. and prior,
could you repeat the question? I apologize.
So during before you went to see Dr. Olson, and prior to that, mm-hmm. when you had your initial surgery to fix that fibular fracture back in 15. So from that time to through the whole time you saw Dr. Olson, did you ever have numbness or tingling or burning in your extremity?
No. No, I mean, I felt it all. There's never any numbness.
Okay. Ah. As he says this, that you he didn't use anesthesia because you had profound sensory loss, yet in his notes, he said you had intact sensation. So I think that's the end of my list. Thank you for your patience and answering my questions. I appreciate it very much. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions? You're welcome. Do you have any questions for our complainant, Dr. Foreman?
No, I think you handled everything. Thank you.
Dr. Yolano.
Yes, I have several questions. Morning, BM. You said that there were false appointments that were made by the doctor's office?
Yes. Yeah, I did not make these appointments.
Do you recall what dates they were?
What dates the appointments were made for me?
Yeah, the false appointments.
Unfortunately, I don't have that off the top of my head. However, I do have records of voicemails.
Okay.
I could find out.
Okay. And concerning the appointments, did you cancel the rest of the appointments? I think it was on 219 and 220, and was it 229?
And I did not book appointments with him. I didn't cancel appointments.
Okay.
He disappeared.
Okay. I was wondering if it was this office that canceled or you canceled. Because on his notes, it said that you were going to go in a different direction.
I did not cancel. There was times where I called his office and said, I'm in care of another doctor who is fixing your mistakes. I don't know why you're making appointments for me, but I'm on the path to, righting your wrongs with another doctor. I did leave him a voicemail saying that. I didn't cancel any appointments or make any appointments with him. I just called him to say, I don't know why you're kind of forging these appointments. I'm in care of another doctor that's fixing your mistakes. That's like kind of the voicemail, roughly ballpark what I left him.
And when you asked for the medical records, was it on 225? Did he say that he couldn't email the records to you, or did he advise you on how to obtain those medical records besides the email?
Dr. Olson, while from the hospital, I tried to get the records. I didn't speak to a person. They would not answer the phone for my phone number or something. I never talked to a person. After I was released from the hospital, I got through to his staff, and I paid money, and that is when they released some documents to me through email.
So was the money paid for the medical records, or was it money paid you owed him for care?
It was a $15 charge for medical records. He didn't have me sign a release to release them through email or anything like that. I called and said, hey, I want these records. You sat on them while the hospital requested them. You sat on them. And I want to see what's in there. Cause I wanted to know why he wouldn't give them up. So I wanted to see them. So I agreed to pay for them. Once I paid for them, they emailed them to me.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it if you provide us with the records that you have with the emails and the text for Dr.
Olson's
office.
I can do that.
Thank you. Another question.
As far as me texting him, he had a service that would text. That would text saying about upcoming appointments. And that's how I text them. I responded to that. But emails and phone calls, voicemails were placed throughout this entire thing that he just ignored and did not respond to.
Okay. As I understand it, you were on the prednisone and the antibiotics prior to seeing Dr. Olson. Did you finish those antibiotics and prednisone before your first visit with Dr. Olson? I just want to clarify that.
Yes. It was the month of, I believe it was the month of December that I had taken those. But it was complete by the time of my visit.
Okay. And how's your leg now?
I have a grotesque scar, which is to be expected, but it's just, it radiates pain constantly. I have to wear a brace daily, and I've just, you know, I've lost range of mobility, and it's just a constant painful reminder of his negligence every day of my life. And like I stated, I cannot work the way I used to. I just experience pain every day, and it's not likely that it will ever subside for the rest of my life.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Bielano. Mr. Rhodes, do you have any questions, sir?
No questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Well, thank you very kindly for your summary, sir, and answering all of our questions. The doctor is not present, and obviously through all our long discussion we've had here, we are finding there is a lot of information that we need. So I am going to make a motion that we continue this in the investigation phase so that we can request more information. So we need to make our list here of what it is we need. Number one, we should request records from, I believe it's Banner Hospital, where the surgery that was done on 12/27 of 2019, that's the date. We also need records, too, from when the gentleman was admitted, went to the ER and was admitted and was in the hospital for 6 days. We have discussed here that we'd like to see any and all information that the complainant has regarding text, emails, voicemails for having to do with getting his records, anything about attempting to contact the doctor and his office. I would also request a sworn affidavit from the complainant's former girlfriend regarding her experiences when she was present at all visits and while he was hospitalized. Let's see what else we have. We're looking to see if there was a fact I don't know that we have a complete chart here from Dr. Olson, but we need evidence about assigning for a records release. From the complainant, you know, evidence, you know, canceled check or however you paid your $15 in, and that your an evidence, you know, an email receipt that you received those records via email, because that does not follow compliance.
Also, those appointments that the patient supposedly canceled were made.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Foreman. You were the next one on my list. Heather, did you get all that?
I missed the last section that Dr. Foreman.
Okay. Dr. Foreman, would you repeat your request for Heather, please?
Sure. We need when the appointments that I think it was the two that the Dr. Olson said they missed were actually created in the electronic medical records system.
And thank you, Madam Chair, board members. I believe I have everything. I'll confirm.
Yeah, can you repeat all that, mm-hmm. so that we can make sure we've gotten everything?
So I have records from the Banner Hospital for the surgery that was performed on December 27, 2019. So I'll just have to know what Banner Hospital that was, but I can look in the file for that. The emergency records for the 6 days that the complainant was admitted to the emergency room. And I'll have to find which emergency room that was as well. Any information regarding text, email, voicemails in the complainant's attempt to get records from Dr. Olson, a sworn affidavit from the complainant's, at the time, girlfriend, and then some sort of a confirmation or a receipt that the complainant has for the records that he did receive from Dr. Olson and confirmation that he received them via email.
And if we have evidence of a signed release, records release?
From Dr. Olson.
Yes. And then I guess if this is part of the, Mr. Rhodes had mentioned attempts, that the complainants, proof of attempts to contact the office, if that's all within our correspondence issue that on that first one?
I think so, yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're all complete here and have everything in there that we're looking for. All right. So I made the motion, and Heather has reread all the components that we're requesting. Do I have a second?
Can I second?
Can I? Thank you. Any other discussion? Anybody think of anything else they'd like to see while we're here discussing this?
I have one thing to add, if possible.
That's yes, please.
I just want to address quickly the first thing on this list here, records from Banner from 12/27/2019. I did not have my surgery. Dr. Olson did not give me surgery at Banner. He gave me surgery at a facility in Scottsdale. I just wanted to mention that.
Oh, please, what's the name of it, sir, so we can correct that in my motion?
Can't remember the name of the facility, and I'm desperately scrubbing through notes right now looking for it. I just know it was a facility in Scottsdale. The Banner came into play because that's where I had my emergency surgery with Dr. Harrell.
Wait a minute. Let me look. Hang on a second. I'm going to look at your...
It should be on the operative note.
That's what I was just thinking, Dr. Foreman. That's where I'm going. It's like, okay.
Was it Honor Health?
Was it an Honor Health Hospital? Look, I was
that sounds,
looking for my op report page
right.
So I can look that up. Okay, it's on page 93, board members. Let's see here. No, Arcadia. No, that's the name. Hang on a second. Let's enlarge this. I can see it. Yeah, Honor Health. That Arcadia is the name of the group, of the practice. So an Honor Health. I wonder if that was Piper Outpatient. Did you guys find the op report?
Greenbaum.
Oh, at Greenbaum. Okay, that's Osborne. That's Scottsdale Osborne. Greenbaum Surgical Center. Okay. There you go, Heather. So I will, well, we did have a second on that motion, so we can just, I'll make an amendment to change that to Honor Health Greenbaum for that surgery on 12/27/19.
And then the only other thing I wanted to mention is that the receipt that I paid the $15 for the records was on March 9th. I do see that. And that's really it.
Okay, thank you.
And I can provide that. I can show you the receipt. I can show you the records I was sent.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thank you. So, everybody's okay with the amendment to that, to change it to Honor Health Greenbaum?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. We're okay with that then. Okay, so we've it's been moved and seconded. Any other discussion? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, opposed? So moved. Okay, sir, I'm sure you'll be in contact with Heather and everything as to receipt of the information that's been requested. So, and if you have any questions, she's there to help you.
And just for clarification, This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. We are holding this matter at the investigatory stage until we have received those documents and the investigator has time to review them.
So that by saying that, sir, that means, you know, this probably will, you know, it's going to take a few months probably to be able to come back and complete the investigation stage, and then we move on from there. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate everyone's time.
You're quite welcome. Thank you. Thanks again, Dr. Polakoff.
You're more than welcome. Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to move on here, crew, to subheading B, issuance of licenses. Our first licensee application here is Shadi Aboud, a DPM. This is an application through Comedy, currently practicing in Massachusetts. Fees have been application fees paid. There are a myriad of licenses that you can see in that file. Transcripts are present. Board scores, of course, there's no clinical skills exam because that was not available at the time that the person had graduated or was in school. And we have no history in the National Practitioner Data Bank. So I will make a motion to accept the application of Dr. Aboud via Comedy. The application is complete. And make a motion to accept for licensure and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Raya Altamonte, DPM. Fees have been paid. She is also applying via Comedy. You can see the multiple licensing and her training. There are no disciplinary actions. Well, there might past discipline, but and that was in Massachusetts. But all the other licenses are clean. Everything else is present in the application. Anyone have any questions or concerns with this applicant? Hearing none, I'll make a motion that Dr. Altamonte has made application via licensure for licensure via Comedy. Her application is complete. and make a motion to approve her license application and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Our next applicant is Dr. Adi Pajaktovic. Fees have been paid. This gentleman is currently a resident at Tucson Medical Center, and a letter from Dr. Dahuki says he will be is expected to graduate on 6/30 of 21. Transcripts, board scores, everything is in order here. So because he's still in his residency, my motion, does anybody have any questions? I'm sorry, I forgot to ask. Hearing no questions, I will make a motion that the application for regular license for the doctor is complete. He's still in his residency and will complete on 6/30 of 21. I'll make a motion to accept his application for licensure and to issue the license upon a successful completion of the residency and upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next application is Nilan Rayo. This is a regular license application, a current practice in Palo Alto, California. Everything is complete here in the application. Like I said, the application fee was paid. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I will move to accept Dr. Rao's application for a regular license and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. And our final applicant is Dr. Mark Rottenstein. This is also for a regular license, and he is currently in California. Everything is complete in his application. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I move to accept the application for regular licensure from Dr. Rottenstein and to issue his license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right, we'll move on to a compliance update, and this is on Dr. Farrell. And Dr. Farrell has indicated that he did not perform any surgeries in March, and that so far no other surgeries have been scheduled. D is our question here with the renewal application that we've been discussing for several months here with Dr. Leonard Wagner. And Heather did receive a fax from Dr. Leonard on the 31st of March requesting that he's requesting to remove and withdraw his application for his 2020 licensure. So now that point is moot. So we do not need to take any action, or do I need to accept his? Okay, super. Thank you so much. All right. We have, our next item is E, is Dr. Farhani has made an application to be an investigator with our board and is present here. I'm sure you've all taken the time to read Dr. Farahani's CV, et cetera. And At this time, I will just ask Dr. Farhani just to make a statement about his interest, and then that will give us opportunity to ask him questions. So, Dr. Farhani, if you would...
Hello, everybody. My interest is, I always feel like if you are a physician or a practitioner, you got to do something good for the public. So obviously I've been in the situation before. I've learned a lot from it. I grew from it. And so here's my opportunity and chance to be able to be of help for the board and also to the state however I can.
Have you ever done investigations, Dr. Farhani, for any other entity that you've been involved with?
No.
Dr. Foreman, Dr. Yolano, or Mr. Rhodes, do you all have any questions for Dr. Farhani or comments? Hello?
Hello. We're here.
Would you be able to make it to the board meetings on the second Wednesday of every month with the report?
Yes, sir. I've always been present.
Thank you.
Mr. Rhodes?
I have no question.
Well, thank you, Dr. Yolano. Mr. Rhodes, sir.
Well, Dr. Farhani's been on the other side, so I think he understands what the board does and the needs that will be put on him as an investigator. So I'd say we'd welcome him.
I have a few comments that I'd like to make. I do appreciate Dr. Farhani's interest, and I am a firm believer in giving back to one's profession and one's community. I think it is really very important. One of my concerns is, because you have had a previous complaint history, and it happens, we understand this, and you've learned from it, you've made that statement, and I believe that to be true. But in the position of the investigation, you're opining on the actions of other physicians, and it could present some difficulty in a situation if you had to be an expert witness in an event that we would be doing like an informal interview. So an attorney for, a doctor who has a complaint could zone in on that history, and in turn it could jeopardize how the complaint could be adjudicated. That is a big concern. So I guess while I appreciate your recommendation or your application, it is my opinion that we maintain your application and give a little bit more time to see that if you can remain complaint free, maybe a period of 6 months to a year, and then reconsider that application.
But those complaints that you had, all of them were dismissed, and one of them was non-disciplinary. So if a person makes mistakes that things happen, everybody is, ultimately it's you guys' decision, but I feel like you can't let one complaint that was clearly unjustified rule somebody's life forever. And I personally think, with all the respect that I have for you, Dr. Campbell, and everybody else, and you know that yourself, I think it's kind of unfair to not give the chance to somebody because everybody's going to have a complaint at some point in their lives. I mean, maybe some won't, and some are not lucky enough or unlucky enough to get that. But, ultimately, I'm here to help however I can, but, I can't justify, and I'm sure you've had investigators that were sitting here in the past 20, 30 years that while they were investigators and they were practicing, they had a complaint.
And board members have had complaints. I understand that. I'm just, you know, I am one person on this board. I am not the whole board. And I am just voicing my opinion. I didn't say no, but I just was kind of like my, you know, it's just to be sure that, because like I said, my concern is that, you know, somebody would get a hold and said, well, look, he's had all these. And I know only one was a non-disciplined. I do realize that. But I'm voicing my opinion, and I know my, you know, and that's my other board members need to, you know, make their comments. Like I said, I'm not the only one sitting on this board. So that's why I appreciate hearing from, you know, the other board members. So I would like to know your feelings about my comments. We need to have a discussion.
Sure. In reference to the, I would let time pass a little bit longer, Dr. Baharani, in lieu of what Dr. Campbell has said. It's just been recent, and it's, give it a little bit, take your time, and see what happens. 6 months to a year, it's not very long, and I'd like to see what transpires within that time period.
Dr. Foreman, do you have any other comments for Mr. Rhodes?
I have no problem in letting him try light board cases to start now. I mean, with his past history.
Mr. Rhodes, any other comments?
No, I wouldn't have any problem with giving Dr. Farkami a shot at being an investigator.
Well, you know, any other comments? You know, like it sounds like we're kind of split down the middle here, so. You know, we can, you know, if issues would arise that would, you know, present problems down the line, I mean, we can, you know, I'm all for, you know, giving people second chances, like I said, and giving
back. I'm almost sure, Dr. Campbell, that I'm going to get another complaint. I'm not sure why that's the case.
Pardon me?
I feel like I'm going to get another complaint, and that's...
Well, that's not, I mean, I just, you know, you get, I want to say it, once bitten, twice shy on things. It's just, you know, when there's so many within a short period of time, I think that, you know, we get red flags, you know, you feel, you know, and you know, we're here to, you know, it's like, it is our job to protect the public. And that's our main focus. And so, when there have been those kind of questions, and obviously, yes, things have been, you know, things were dismissed, and like, you had some non-disciplinary stuff. And I realize, you know, everybody who, you know, practices gets get complaints and things. So, you know, and it's well taken from Dr. Foreman that, you know, typically when we have an investigator start, it's just, you know, give a very basic, you know, simple, or very, you know, you can call a case simple, but a simple complaint, one that's not as involved or something, to kind of get your feet wet. That, you know, that's usually been the procedure that we follow. So, like I said, I feel like here we are split down the middle here. So, trying to come up, you know, a solution that can be fair to, you know, fair to this board and fair to Dr. Farahani is kind of where, you know, where we need to be. So, I mean, and Dr. Farahani, it's possible if, you know, he may decide he doesn't like it. You know, so how do we know that too? You know, not everybody finds that it's something that they end up having the time for or want to do. So I will entertain a motion from anyone on this matter.
is there a school that you can teach the investigating skills?
Well, we have a guide guideline document, and of course, in the past too, the investigators that have been present for quite some time, such as Dr. Polakoff, has been very helpful to new investigators when they've had questions. And I am sure if we would ask Dr. Polakoff, that she would still be amenable to that. And of course, you know, I've always been open to questions too from investigators, but that's how there has been training in the past. Because there's other documents and paperwork that has to happen with all that. It's just not a, you know, it doesn't happen just right overnight, because there's stuff with the state, correct, Heather?
Madam Chair, board members, with a board investigator position, it's a contract position, so it's really just getting the contract to Dr. Farahani, the W-9, and having him sign everything and sending it back to me. There really is no state training or paperwork that he has to go through.
Yes, he will not be considered an employee of the board. He will be considered a consultant who works at the pleasure of the board.
So,
Dr. Campbell, if I may add, by all means, and Heather knows this already, I'm not doing this for a contractual position for me to get paid. I am willing to do this free of charge because, first of all, I want to gain my experience, and B, I think I can be of help. And because I have been on the other side of, I know how it is, and to protect the public and also to make sure that you give a sound report on exactly what events cause the particular scenario, so then you have a better picture. So, you know, I really want all of you guys to feel the same. So, I'm willing to accept for you to do it in 6 months or a year, because it doesn't make me feel good to know that two of my colleagues don't feel the same as the other two. It just doesn't feel good. I respect you guys enough to know that your decision and your advice matters to me. So I really don't want you to be hung on that and make it a difficult one for you. So,
well, it's not. It sounds so trite. It's not it's not personal. That's not it. It's just I had to voice my concern. That's the way I am. I'm not going to mix words and not say how I feel about something. And that's why we have this discussion with, you know, colleagues. And that's why I said I'm willing to give chances, but I just, that was my, you know, when I read something, this was my initial feeling. Now that we have you here, this is different. This is how you have a discussion and you talk about things. It can't be a one-sided thing. So, you know, I did not mean to, I am not trying to insult or belittle or anything like that. I just trying to do what I feel is my job. Did you have a comment, Heather?
I do, Madam Chair and board members. And I just wanted to say that I believe it's like a more of an administrative issue. So, Dr. Farahani, you know, depending on how the board votes today, Dr. Farahani can always call and I can help explain the administrative procedures of the board. You know, the investigative process from an investigation to an informal hearing to potentially a formal hearing in front of an administrative law judge.
That's helpful.
With expert witnesses.
And I would also be working with him because need to be able to get the kind of documents that we need to support whatever we're going to substantiate. And so
right. And
I would have training with him as well.
And those are listed, too, in the guidelines. And some of that probably maybe use some updating, maybe, too, to make sure that everything is, you know, we do that with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I will then, I'm going to go ahead and I will accept I'd like to accept Dr. Farahani's application to be an investigator for our board and have Heather proceed with him on proper documentation administratively regarding the stuff that we need for Arizona DOA. Administration DOA, all these things. Anyway, and then you know, as far and planning the training with Heather and Seamus on Mr. Monahan, I should say on that. So, do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? And, okay, hearing none. Let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All right. So Heather will be working with you there.
Thank you so much.
You know, again, like I said, I am, you know, grateful for people to be interested.
I just want to know, Dr. Campbell, at least I mentioned that.
Okay.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, is that Mr. Rhodes? Hello, Mr. Rhodes. Are we still on?
I can barely hear.
You guys, you're still here. Dr. Okay. Farahani was just speaking. Just hang on. I didn't know if you had heard him. We were just still talking. So,
okay.
But Heather, you know, Heather and Seamus will proceed with what needs for Dr. Farahani. So we'll look forward to his first file. Thanks. All right. Anybody need a break or anything? All right. I just need a drink of water. All right. So, the next topic is 6, which is the discussion on the update of the clinical skills podiatric examination. The reason I had this put in here from Heather, I sit on the National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners, and I'm on the CSPE committee. Anyway, so in a nutshell, with COVID, things were, you know, we still were giving the exam, and then there were some things as you can read in this statement from the National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners, you know, or APMLE, that at this time that exam is being suspended, and hopefully we are in the process of developing different formats for it. And you, anyway, and the medical examiners and the osteopathic medical examiners were all in the same situation. They had, you know, they have a lot more students to test and everything. And of course, you know, all the stakeholders have their opinions about this exam in general. And again, the National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners are there to protect the public, just like we are. Anyway, so this really does not affect people coming to this state applying for licensure, because the way our statute reads, it just says parts 1, 2, and 3, correct, Heather? So, or there's no delineation to having the requirement for the CSPE exam, so that will not affect us. So anybody have any questions on that? Yeah, I just, like I said, I just had it in here for you know, basic knowledge, and we'll see how this process goes. Next is Heather's executive director's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. As the board knows, SB 1283 and SB 1284 both passed the Senate and were transmitted to the House on March 22nd. Both bills were heard by the House. Both Dr. Campbell and Mr. Joe Abadi attended that meeting, and the both bills passed the House unanimously. On March 29th, both bills were heard by the House Rules Committee, and both passed the Rules Committee unanimously. So right now, it's just still in the House, waiting to go to the Committee of the Whole and go through the rest of the process before it's transmitted to the governor's office. So I will keep the board apprised of that. And then my only other update is on renewals. I did order renewal postcards. I'm still going to be mailing those out. I'll be doing that at the beginning of May, and I do plan on sending a mass email to licensees regarding the upcoming renewal as well. Licensees cannot begin to renew until May 1st. So that's the way our database system works. A licensee can only renew 60 days in advance of the actual expiration date. I provided a current budget, and I can answer questions on that. And if there's no questions, I have the complaint log available. There's been no changes since I sent out board materials with the complaint log. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
You know what? I was going to just, for information's sake, I got an email from CE Broker the other day.
Yes, and I have responded to several emails about that. Licensees asking me if it's a legitimate email, and Dr. Foreman actually forwarded me an email that, you know, the email that he received from CE Broker. So I know that they were going to be sending out email reminders, but I was not aware that they'd do it 90 days in advance. Maybe that was part of my training. I just don't remember.
Yeah, because I thought it was interesting because I don't have an account set up with them.
Yeah.
So that's what I was like, oh. You know.
I give them an updated licensee list weekly.
Okay. So
that's part of our contract with
them. Oh, it is. Okay.
Yes.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, did you guys set up accounts with CE Broker?
I didn't, personally.
I tried to set up an account. I entered the information, and I wasn't able to set up an account. I couldn't get to the next step. So something happened to the website.
Oh, it didn't find my license number. Is that what happened to you, Dr. Yolano?
I you know what I did? I copied exactly what it was on the board, my license number,
right,
address, and everything on the information. So when I clicked on it, it got stuck. Nothing happened.
Okay.
And I know there is a helpline, Dr. Yolano, for CE Broker, and they are really helpful over there, so you could give them a call if you needed to.
I'll try that when I get the chance. Thanks, Heather.
Mm-hmm. All right. Summary of current events. I don't have anything here on the agenda for that. And then Heather's got the legislative update.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. All of the bills were, I summarized last month, they're still pretty much where the board's bills are. They're just waiting to continue through the process. I'm happy to go through and summarize them or just answer questions. When they go to the governor's office and are signed, I will definitely let the board know. But it looks like all of them are going to pass at this point.
Okay, since nobody has any questions, we'll move on to 10, which is call to the public, and there is no one here to call. So does anybody have any items that they'd like to see for future meeting agendas? We need one of my thoughts, and I, you know, with the issue of you know, the medical assistance and the radiology stuff, and the information that I had sent to you and Seamus regarding the American Podiatric Association, the Association for Podiatric Medical Assistance. That's kind of the, you know, the subcomponent to the APMA. That. If that's something that we should discuss and invite, I mean, it's not our, I mean, we're not doing that, you know, we're not there as part of education, but the fact, you know, we sent it on to Dr. or to Mr. Abadi, and did you send it to Dr. Discount or Dr. The president of the state association? Why am I drawing a blank? Mary Peters.
Madam Chair, board members, I only sent the information to Mr. Abadi, but he did confirm that he sent it off to other, you know, his other counterparts in the association. So I'm assuming that Dr. Discott and Mary Peters were part of that. And my thought on this is going to be where we begin the rulemaking process to further define the medical assistance. So that this was something that I know you and I have worked on a little bit outside of, you know, this, but it would be something that was brought to the full board in the fall. Right, because by the time legislation becomes effective, it'll be end of August, and then we would need to start the rulemaking process at that time.
As Mr. Rhodes and Dr. Foreman and Dr. Ulano, when Heather and I were participating in the Zoom meeting, the House, regarding our bills, and there were, you know, the discussion of the definition of medical assistant, well, we received a couple questions about their education. And so that's where I had mentioned, well, you know, that the through the APMA with the, you know, the American, you know, the Podiatric Medicals, Medical Assistant Association, I did mention them, and the reason then I forwarded that on to Heather and then to Mr. Abadi and then to the state association was that they do have a radiology course within that, and that could be certainly an avenue for us, for people to go through, since we've had the issues here with this, you know, with what happened in the state. So that's why I mentioned that and forwarded that on. But it's not our job as a board to set up educational programs and things. So that's, you know, but I wanted you guys to be aware of it. Have you guys in your practices, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Yolanda, did you ever have any of your medical assistants that were members of that association?
I haven't.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So I just wanted to put that out there so that you guys, you know, as I'm sure, I don't know if you guys are getting questions from, you know, other colleagues about the radiology issue or not, or if it's just kind of, you know, anybody's been saying anything more about it to you.
Yes, I still didn't get any questions.
All right, so our next meeting will be May the 12th, 2021, so does anybody have any other business that we haven't, or anything else, comments? All right, so then at 10:08 a.m., I will move to adjourn our meeting.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. And thank you, everybody, for good participation today. I think the meeting went very smooth, so appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody. See you next month.
Okay, guys.
See you next month. Have a good month.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay.